Welcome to the May podcast for Neurosurgical Focus. I'm Natalie Pincham. The May issue is on the topic of vascular neurosurgery. In this podcast, Lisa Mitchell speaks with Ashala Schroll and Dr. Rafael Guzman of the Stanford Stroke Center at Stanford University School of Medicine about their article, Pathogenesis and Radiobiology of Brain Arteriovenous Malformations, Implications for Risk Stratification in Natural History and Post-Treatment Course.
I guess my first question for you is, not much is known about the etiology of brain AVMs. What do we know?
Well, one of the things that is classically taught is that the brain AVMs are a congenital lesion that's characteristic of abnormal vascular vessels that directly shunt blood from the arterial system to the venous system with no intervening capillary bed. And what's traditionally been taught is that it's a congenital defect and present with you throughout life and has sort of a fixed risk associated with it of becoming unstable and bleeding. And I think what is one of the things that we wanted to discuss in the review and has increasingly become an issue in the literature is whether or not there's evidence to support that. And with increased availability of neuroimaging studies, we've seen an increase in the detection of AVMs and the incidental detection of asymptomatic AVMs. We haven't seen evidence of intrauterine detection or increased childhood detection of AVMs that make us believe that these lesions are, in fact, congenital in the same way that other congenital anomalies are. And so that supports the concept that maybe these are sporadic lesions or lesions that grow over time and are dynamic, both in their clinical behavior and in their biological and radiographic characteristics.
I think what I would add, I think one of the key features, we think these are possibly dynamic lesions. It's not like you're born with it and that's it. They can probably change over time.
What determines treatment in unruptured brain AVMs? Or is it better to leave them alone unless they're ruptured?
Well, that's sort of also a subject of controversy at this point. What's known about the natural history of unruptured brain AVMs is relatively limited. The initial studies that looked at defining the natural history of brain AVMs in largely untreated cohorts were done in the 1970s and beyond, where the majority of lesions that came to clinical attention came to attention after a hemorrhagic event. And so upwards of 70% of those cohorts were lesions that had already hemorrhaged. And so what we were looking at was the recurrent hemorrhage rate, which was defined as around 2 to 4% per year. And in recent studies from the Columbia group and at UCSF, where you stratify by unruptured and ruptured status, we see that the unruptured AVMs seem to have about a 1 to 2% per year risk of hemorrhaging, and the ruptured lesions have about a 4 to 6% per year risk of hemorrhaging. And so that risk of future hemorrhage is probably lower in unruptured lesions, but there's no evidence to show that it's non-existent. And given that the average age of diagnosis in brain AVM patients is in the 30s and 40s and otherwise healthy adults, that 1 to 2% per year risk of having a future hemorrhage is still a cumulative risk that we believe indicates that prophylactic therapy would be beneficial.
And prophylactic therapy would be surgery or medicine?
Well, currently there's no medical options for treating brain AVMs. All the options are aimed at eliminating the risk of future hemorrhage by either obliterating the lesion, which is the goal of radiosurgery and endovascular embolization, which is using glue to exclude the AVM nidus from the circulation. And then the other option is to surgically remove the entire lesion and through neurosurgical resection. Those are the only options available right now, but with better understanding of the biology of the AVM and the biology of the response to radiation, we may be able to come up with adjuvant therapies that address that and either induce obliteration by an adjuvant process or by a primary pharmacological process.
But in an individual patient with, let's say, an unruptured AVM, how would you make that call? Is that just based on their clinical condition, or what would you look for about whether to treat or not?
Yeah, so this is always a very complex decision-making process, and it's a lot about the lesion size and mainly the anatomical location of the lesion. And so it depends if lesions are, you know, cortical, superficial, basal ganglia, or brainstem. And we have reviewed these different series at our institution, and it's pretty much in agreement with other series that most of the lesions, especially you know, a deep white matter, basal ganglia area, posterior fossa with involvement of cerebellum and brainstem, will need multimodality treatment, and multimodality treatment you know, has increased the cure rate. The size of the lesion will mainly determine, you know, if radiosurgery alone is an option or not. But in lesions, you know, probably 3 centimeters and greater, if possible, it's going to be a combination of embolization and radiosurgery, or embolization and surgery. And rarely these days, for small cortical lesions, is surgery alone an option.
So when you treat it with stereotactic radiosurgery, what is that process like? In your paper, you describe some theories on how that affects the AVM. Could you just discuss that a little bit? What do we know about what stereotactic radiosurgery does in AVM?
Sure. Well, that's an area where further research is intensely interested in focusing. But what we know as of today is based on the study of AVM tissue from patients that were initially treated with radiosurgery and either had a recurrent hemorrhage and had surgery, or some other issue, mast effect or edema, which required surgery. So we have the tissue available after the radiation. And then also studies in animal models of the process of arterial response to radiation. And what those studies indicate is that the endothelial cells that line the blood vessels, they, after the insult from the radiation, they shrink in size and expose the underlying wall of the blood vessel, which promotes fibrin deposition. And over time, those endothelial cells actually slough off. And it's thought that when you treat an AVM with radiosurgery, it can be months to up to 3 years before you actually see a response in terms of obliteration of the AVM on imaging studies. And it's thought that latency period is due to how long it takes for endothelial cells to undergo mitosis, which is on the order of months to years. And so those endothelial cells, when they attempt to go through mitosis, the damage from the radiation is then becomes apparent as the DNA is either directly damaged from ionizing radiation or indirectly damaged from free radicals, and the cell is unable to complete mitosis and then goes through apoptosis where it sloughs off. And with denuding of the endothelium over time, the smooth muscle layer then proliferates and promotes occlusion of the lumen. And the studies from rat models seem to support that timeline, and AVM tissue show the similar pathology after having radiation treatment at various time points.
So in a patient, if you treated them that way, they would still be at a risk for rupture and so forth for the next several years. Do you use anything else as well, or just kind of monitor them while you're waiting for SRS to take effect?
So that's correct, and that's one of the problems is that we know that you know, depending on the size and location, which will eventually determine the amount of radiation dose you can give, that we will have a maybe 70%, if you want to take an average, a success rate after 3 years for obliteration. But in the meantime, the patients have to be monitored because there is still a flow in the AVM, and they are being monitored also for side effects of radiation, like radiation necrosis. And there is debate about the percent risk for hemorrhage during that time, but I think it's still generally believed that there is a ongoing risk for hemorrhage, and that you know, pending complete obliteration, that risk remains. In the waiting period, we usually don't do anything besides MRI follow-up and then angiographic follow-up at 3 years. And one of the big problems which we address in this paper also, we don't have a very good predicting factor which patient is going to respond for sure or not, and the larger cohorts analyzing it find certain factors, as I said, as size and dose relation, but apart from these measures, we don't have any good biological factors for us to help guide the decision making whether radiosurgery will be successful or not.
And the goal of intervention is always to the prophylaxis against future hemorrhage. And what's enticing about radiosurgery is the non-invasive aspect of it for patients. What the major downside is that there is a percentage of patients, up to 30%, that won't have a successful obliteration from the radiosurgery, which is the intent of treatment. And so that's 30% of patients that continue to be at risk for hemorrhage. Whereas in surgery, with complete resection, the risk is eliminated. But then you have the surgical morbidity and mortality. So that generally, in the first year after treatment, if you get past that first year, patients have excellent outcomes after surgical intervention. Whereas radiosurgery, if you look at the outcomes, in terms of future bleeds, that continues to happen at a rate that mimics natural history, until you see complete obliteration. So in a portion of the patients treated with radiosurgery, they'll continue to have their natural history.
You discussed endothelial progenitor cells. What types of therapeutic strategies do you think you could come out of this research? And maybe just say a little bit about the role of endothelial progenitor cells in AVM.
Sure. So AVMs are known to be an angiogenic lesion. Looking at the tissue, there's expression of multiple factors, VEGF, HIF-1, that are associated with endothelial cell proliferation and angiogenesis. What hasn't been studied in AVMs to date is the role of bone marrow-derived cells in promoting that process. At UCSF, Tomoki Hashimoto and Bill Young's group published a paper where they looked at the proliferation rate of the endothelial cells, and they showed that it's abnormally high with the Ki-67, which is a protein that's a marker of cell proliferation that's often used to characterize the malignancy potential in various tissues. And AVMs are much higher than normal, which shows that there's a higher rate of endothelial turnover, and perhaps that rate of turnover is what reflects the instability in the lesion and the risk of hemorrhage, or conversely, the sensitivity of the lesion and the response to radiosurgery. So we're very interested in studying the role of endothelial progenitor cells, which are known to contribute to tumor angiogenesis and to contribute to as a protective factor in cardiovascular risk in other studies, in terms of the biology of AVMs as a marker of the lesion in terms of its current biological status, and then as a marker for risk stratification and treatment decisions.
I guess lastly, you talk a bit about future directions in research, and I know you've touched on it a little bit already. Is there anything you want to add about what needs to be done and what you guys are doing in your lab right now about AVMs?
Well, I think the general trend in medicine is away from these large epidemiological studies and clinical trials, which are burdened by trying to take a large population-based conclusion and apply it to an individual, which can be possible in certain diseases, but in something as complex as AVMs, where there's so many factors that play a role. Dr. Guzman was alluding to the size of the AVM. Other factors are presence of aneurysms in the nidus, the location of the AVMs, the draining veins. Each patient, therefore, is very different than the next, and so it's hard to take these large studies and come up with one or two factors that's really going to guide you in approaching a patient. What's much more helpful is if we have a marker of what is biologically going on with this lesion. And some examples from other diseases is BNP is a protein that's released when the atria are stretched, and in coronary care units, they look at BNP as a sign of blood backing up into the atria and the heart going into failure. Troponins are a well-known marker of ischemia in the heart. And so those types of things where the lesion is exposed to the blood and its dynamic status can be measured in the blood is where we think that the future of clinical management for these lesions may be headed. So in our lab, Dr. Guzman has done a great deal of preliminary work with endothelial progenitor cells as a marker for cerebrovascular disease, and we believe that might give us insights into AVM pathophysiology, both for natural history risk and for response to treatment. And so we're working with Dr. Gary Steinberg and Dr. Steve Chang in collaboration with Harvey Cohen in the pediatric side to look at proteins and using proteomic techniques to look at protein and peptide biomarkers that may guide us in cerebrovascular surgery, including in AVMs.
Is there anything else you guys want to add?
No, I think he hit the main points. I think a big deal of our research is going to go to develop these biomarkers and see if this is going to help us with risk stratification and better assessment of natural risk, and if it will directly guide therapy in terms of new therapy based on these findings. I think that's something needed to be shown yet. But what we hope is to get a better way to do the individualized medicine and improve the patient-tailored treatment modalities.
Well, thank you both very much for making time for this.
Thank you.
This concludes our podcast for the May issue of Neurosurgical Focus. Thank you for listening. Please join us for the June issue, when the topic will be decompressive craniectomy for trauma and cerebrovascular disease. For more information on how to submit your research to Neurosurgical Focus or to see a list of upcoming topics, please visit thejns.org and click on Neurosurgical Focus. Comments on this podcast can be sent to jnspodcast@thejns.org.